joining us today, a man of letters, the very opinionated, but always profound, Gore Vidal. Next on the Culture Catch. Today's show is sponsored by our friends at Final Draft. If you've got a script to write, they've got the software solution. Check them out at finaldraft.com. And now, Mr. Gore Vidal.
How do we right the ship, or do we have to crash and burn? Do we have to let, does the empire have to crumble before we can rebuild it? Is there hope? Is there enough movement in the youth, do you think? Can we create a groundswell?
No. We didn't educate them. They don't know any history. They don't know why we are where we are. As bright as the kids were the other night over in Van Nuys, they're just blanks, just blanks in their head. They hadn't been told anything. They hear rumors, that's about all. And then anytime they hear anything, like the Japanese wanted to surrender at the time of Hiroshima and were begging Truman to let them surrender. That's just conspiracy theory. They're immediately told by the keepers of the flame. So they're told everything that they hear that might be truth is a lie. Well, if you're 15 or 16 and not all that plugged in, you're going to accept that, well, if the other side lies, they lie too. So, you know, to hell with them all. It'll take at least three generations to recover the United States, the nation that I was lived in, born in, from being a homeland. That's at least three generations. That's a long time. And it may not recover even then. Once the dictatorship is in place, police state is there. They're listening in on our conversations. They're listening in on, they're keeping track of everybody. They've got a database on everybody. They're going to have more and more stuff. More and more people will be wandering around with plastic stuck in their legs, which will trace their movements, so you can sit at a central monitor, and like they, as they do now with these bracelets they put on allegedly disturbing criminals. That's going to take a long time. And there's no base to build on. You know, you'd have to be a real Johnny Appleseed to cross the country talking about things I've been talking about with you. There's nothing I say that I cannot back up. And if I can't, I'm generally right about it, because information sometimes keeps changing, but the general drift of things doesn't change. And the attitude when a president says that he has every right to arrest somebody that he calls an enemy combatant, enemy of whom? Combatant for what? He got away with that, and the Supreme Court lets him get away with it. It's a non-existent category. It's an invented category. And even worse, that he can then declare preemptive war. Only Congress can do that. Now you have a republic in which nobody knows what the word means. Nobody knows what the rules are. Nobody knows how we declare war, how we declare peace, how we do this, how we do that. And nobody's going to tell them. I used to say years ago, when I was a really active politician back in the early 60s, and I always made a kind of general pitch to particularly mixed audiences, parents and stuff like that. And I said, I have never in my life met a dull 6-year-old, and I've never met an interesting 16-year-old. What is it you're doing to them? What are you doing to them to make them so surly, so dull, so ignorant, so out of it. That has to be some sort of hidden policy, or if it's not a policy, it's certainly a reality.
The Brave New World.
No.
Huxley wasn't too far from the truth. It's...
Well, he was wandering around in the area.
Do you think we'll ever really know what happened on 9/11?
Mm-hmm. They knew it was going to happen. Well, in a little book I wrote, one of my pamphlets, as I call them, Perpetual War for Perpetual Peace, we were warned by Putin in Russia, by Mubarak in Egypt. Certain elements of Mossad had sent us a warning that we were going to have visitors, unfriendly visitors from the sky. There's a whole group of FBI guys out in Milwaukee, someplace like that, who later hired a first-rate lawyer to put their case, and they were told they'd be executed under extreme laws to protect the nation from truth. It was pretty awful stuff. All the warnings came in. Then even that kangaroo court they set up in Congress to find out about 9/11, well, they found out a lot of people were trying to tell the government. I mean, the daily report to him, suddenly screaming and gnashing their teeth, they produced that, and they said, we're going to have some visitors from Osama bin Laden in the near future. We knew quite enough to protect ourselves.
Didn't we know that, didn't Oliver North at one point warn them that he said the biggest threat will be Osama, his rise to power?
I would like to think
15
not.
15 years. I read that somewhere on the internet. I don't know if they're...
I don't believe a word of it.
No.
Just because I don't believe a word he says. I mean, any man who's only famous for having lied to Congress is not exactly an authority in my view. But
who were your early heroes, or who are your heroes to date?
I had no early ones, and I have none now. I suppose my grandfather, who was totally blind at the age of 10, got himself through law school, brought Oklahoma into the Union. I make no comment on that. And became their first senator and served from 1907 to 1937. He was a very brilliant man who just sacrificed his career twice. He got defeated because he went against his constituents when he thought they were very wrong about a number of things. So that sort of statesman was what I admired, and he was also a brilliant, well-read man. I know, I read most of those books to him in my teens before I went in the Army. Yes, he was a heroic figure. An original populist, when it really was the party of the people.
Do you think, getting back to the mess that we're in, do you think a third party would help the situation?
I've gone that route. Dr. Spock and I started something called the People's Party. We got a lot of support from boys who did not want to be drafted. Well, I guess we were opportunistic. We knew we'd get all of them. Then we found out not one of them was interested in politics. You couldn't talk about minimum wage. You couldn't talk to them about anything. They were as uninformed as their families, or as the government that was going to send them off to fight in Vietnam, a war we were never able to explain sensibly to anybody what on earth we were doing there. So that's my experience with third parties, which is right. Not a happy one.
Let's shift to popular culture again. What would Capote have thought of the film Capote?
Well, I just loved it. I thought it was so wonderful. And of course, I'm much better looking, you know, than that fat actor. I could do an hour on what Truman would say. Jealous Gore. To which my answer is the only way you're going to get an Academy Award or anything
for your work is to be impersonated.
Do you think Brokeback Mountain would have been received differently if it would have had two lead gay actors as opposed to two straight actors? Would have been created the media frenzy and the accolades if it would have been two unknown gay actors who were known as being
sissy boys?
Or just not necessarily sissy boys, just, you know, being homosexuals and being actors, good at their craft.
Well, you have to get more to roots on this problem. I have always maintained there's no such thing as a homosexual person. It's an adjective describing an act. We all know what a homosexual act is. Mm. And they do exist, and some people practice them more often than others. That's about it. Identity does not follow upon homosexual acts. It doesn't mean you're anything. It doesn't mean that you are a great dentist, that you're another Michelangelo, you're this or that. It doesn't mean a thing. Well, when you start from my position, that everybody's everything, and sex is a continuum, and in most lives there's a lot of changing around, if the person alive has any luck at all. There's a great deal going on which is not calculable nor identifiable, nor indeed should you. To categorize is to enslave. And to convince a lot of people they're homosexuals is like convincing the Jews that they all killed Christ and should be eliminated by Adolf Hitler. Well, that was certainly a bad thing to want and a bad thing to do. But again, that was allowing categorization to take over. So to the extent that the movie did not categorize, and there were no speeches about it, and there was no publicity about it, oh, now we have two guys who've been lovers all their lives. Now you'll see what wonderful people they are. Everybody's going to say, I'm disgusted, you know, I don't want to see them. I was also the first to predict it was not going to get any Academy Awards. I was corrected the other night that Ang Lee, a wonderful director, he did get an award. But the picture, really, when you say it didn't get any awards, the actors, best movie, all of that was just out. Because I'm a member of the Academy. And most of our, we're very democratic with a small D, which most of our membership are grips, carpenters, guys who live in the valley, blue-collar guys. They don't want to see fags up there. So nothing happened with the Academy beyond Ang Lee.
Why are Americans so outwardly uptight about sexuality and yet so secretly perverse? You know, I mean, you go back a couple of years, Janet Jackson's breast got exposed and it became bigger news than who won the Super Bowl. You can't even remember.
Well, no, that is media working to avoid real subjects. They have to grab on somebody's tit, you know, before they can have something to write about. They're not going to talk about $4 trillion worth of debt. That's a real subject. When you get on that, you're going to have a lot of angry people out there. But you can't tell the people the truth about anything, so you go into nothing time. I don't find Americans any more prudish than any other people. We have our professional Christians who are pretty ghastly, but they don't have many votes. They don't realize how few they are when it comes to election time, even in the mosquito republics.
But they seem to bark the loudest when somebody might challenge their way of thinking.
Well, because the media's on their side. Right. The media knows these are barking dogs. And if something serious is about to come up, the protection of the border. Now, there are a lot of serious elements into that.
Right.
Which, like xenophobia, for one. Well, if they can get off the subject quickly with gay marriage, they'll get off to gay marriage within 2 seconds.
Right.
And that carries them into another territory.
Who are your favorite underrated writers, Gore? Do you have any?
I don't think much about writers. I mean, it's the last subject that interests me, no.
No.
Underrated citizens, perhaps.
Okay.
More my kind of thing. Well, the school teachers I was talking to, many of them were middle-aged to my age, which is elderly. They were by now principals of schools down in the valley. And they were so sensible. They were just wise women. I think, for the most part, not married. Dedicated their schools, very clear idea of what was wrong with education and so on, and felt rather helpless in the face of public apathy, lack of budgets, and school boards that I don't think are very helpful. So that interests me more than who's written a novel, for Christ's sake. You know, that's his problem.
When you wrote the book Messiah, what was the initial reaction by the press? Do you remember?
Oh, no, well, because I'd written The City and the Pillars, so I was not a serious writer. In fact, I was considered to be one of the worst writers in the United States. Evil, morally, and my prose was bad, which coming from newspaper writers is really the affront of the week. But it was a great success in Europe, particularly England. The reviews were marvelous over there. In America, you don't get reviews. You get the opinions of journalists about you and your sex life and gossip about you. That's all you get. They seldom bother to read the book. Sometimes they'll read the dust jacket copy to make sure they're trying to get the plot right. That's about it. No. We have no literary culture. I mean, even to pretend we do is cheating your listeners.
But everyone has a blog now. You know,
that's something else.
Everyone's open diary can be found at a URL website.
Yeah, there are a lot of open diaries that I would like to shut.
I have this theory that L. Ron Hubbard may have been inspired by Messiah.
I think he must have known it.
Yeah.
I met him. We had the same publisher, Ian Ballantyne, who went in for science fiction. And I think he was the original publisher, this I don't know, but of Hubbard, who in that case would certainly, well, everybody in science fiction had read Messiah. I mean, it was a, you know, its greatest fan was Alice Cooper.
Really?
Who had talked about it time and again. Alice Cooper's still around, I think.
Oh, yeah, we'll have to ask him about that. That's
fantastic.
Alice
Cooper
yeah.
about it and say, I've always welcomed his support. And it had many fans as a book, a lot, obviously, in science fiction time, a lot among the sort of far-out people, like Brother Alice. And who knows that... It's a different territory that I occupy from Scientology. But then he was interested in making money, and I was interested in just chatting.
Do you think we'll ever see another writer on the cover of Time magazine outside of like a J.K. Rowling who wrote Harry Potter?
Yeah, pretty unlikely, yeah. The fact I was on twice, is... I don't know what went wrong, because Time always loathed me. And yet twice they felt they had to put me on, once for 1876, and another time for Myra Breckinridge.
Talk about that experience, Myra Breckinridge. And
well, the movie was exactly what I predicted. It was a total mess, made by people who really were desperate to show Raquel Welch... sodomizing a boy. Well, this can be a very admirable thing to watch and good for everybody, even those without piles, but at the same time, it isn't what it was about.
What's the biggest misconception about you?
Depends on what I've been reading lately. Well, if I were my subject and really did nothing but write about myself, think about myself, that's a meaningful question, but I don't write about myself. I've done one memoir. I've just finished the second one. Each of them is 90% about other people, from Federico Fellini to Tennessee Williams, I mean, to Jack Kennedy, to people I've known. There's practically nothing about me in it. I don't think of myself as being an interesting subject. If I am to other people, they're welcome to it. And meanwhile, I go about really what interests me, why our governments do what they do, why our culture is what it is, how Tennessee changed the entire way we observe the sexes, not only in the U.S., but in the world, that the male was an extraordinary sex symbol. Before that, a man was just a guy in one of those gray hats they used to wear. What's the Italian word for them?
Fedora?
Fedora, but the more jaunty one. A man was that with a little grin and a buttoned-down collar, and that was a man, attractive man. Marlon got out on stage sweating up a storm, and suddenly the entire audience started to ovulate, including the men. That's stuff I write about.
Is there a single work or character by you that would best represent you as an individual or your personality?
Oh, good heavens, my personality is of no interest to me, and I can't imagine it being of interest to anybody else. The book I wish everybody would get out and go out and read is Creation, in which I do Buddhism, Confucius, Socrates, Zoroaster, the beginnings of monotheism. It's a crash course in comparative religion and in philosophy, and it's very painless to read. Of course, there was not one interesting review in the entire United States because no reviewer knew anything about this. They weren't. You see, we were not really specialists here. Had you written about Melville? I myself have theories about Melville. They're somewhat different from others, and you know. The fools have held at forts for too long.
Do you have any advice for any of the young writers or playwrights today besides learn your history?
Well, not if you don't want to learn it. There's some people who are allergic to history. Learn a history, if not the history. You keep doing it, you can get through, but I'm not particularly optimistic. Negativism was the main attack on me the other night in Van Nuys. Well, I said, that you want me to invent positive things in a country with nothing positive to say for it? Where am I to find it? The Grand Canyon? Do you want me to talk about that? You want to talk to me in labor relations? We always used to say to foreigners who came here, I was a Hollywood hack for years at MGM. And I remember a British journalist saying, oh, well, how can you live in a place like this, you know? A place totally without tradition. I mean, it's detached from everything on earth. Without tradition, I said. The Warner Brothers Christmas layoff is one of the greatest traditions in the United States.
And Disneyland.
Well, I do not speak of the sublime.
Do you enjoy going on Bill Maher's show?
No. I like him, and he can be funny, but no, he threw me away with that god-awful Al Franken. I came on to talk about Conyers and what happened in Ohio. Al Franken, who is a Borscht Belt comedian that couldn't get a laugh in anywhere in the Catskills, he's ghastly and vain beyond belief. He's out there talking about his campaign for a senator from Minnesota. We get 10 or 15 minutes of that, and Bill is just looking at the jokes he's got lined up to tell. And I kept trying to break in. I said, you know, Bill, we wanted to talk about Ohio. Oh, he said, that's behind us. And that's when he got behind me. And I said, well, it isn't behind us. Two elections stolen in a row. So then this gabble of, I'm going to run for the Senate, and we've seen the guy. They had just shown a shot of whoever's the current senator. It was pretty awful. I'm going to defeat him, and so on. He's using it for a campaign.
And advocate.
He has as much chance of being elected to the Senate as I do to the See of Peter, which for non-believers is the papacy. I'm not about to be Pope, and he's not about to be the senator from Minnesota or wherever it is. And the way he just overrode everything I had to say, because he was so important. And Bill wasn't listening. Bill was rehearsing his jokes.
Did you admire the likes of the Mort Sahls and the Lenny Bruces when they were doing their...
Yes and no. I had objections to both of them. Lenny Bruce, I knew the least about, and occasionally every time I went to see him, it was in some basement on Madison Avenue, Kenneth Tynan was always taking me. He says, he's the funniest man in the world. And I'd go there, and I said, well, when's he going to be funny? He said, well, this isn't a good night, would say Ken, you know. And Mort went too crazy, I thought, too early. And again, they all get themselves back to themselves. They finally become their own creation. They are their subject.
Where do you get your news today? Primarily on the internet? Do you watch any of the news broadcasts? Do you find the BBC to be palatable?
Oh, I like it whenever I can find it. I don't know how to find stuff on the box. I watch mostly C-SPAN. I feel as if I've been in the Senate now for 45 years, you know. I know where everybody's sitting. I know who's going to say what next, you know. It's very cozy.
All the grandstanding.
Yeah. And that's what interests me, because that's the closest you get to governance.
Right. And it's all there. It really is fascinating.
Suddenly the things that come across that they're not ready for.
Right.
And the other thing, which I think is just glorious, is the House of Commons, question time. You see what democracy can be like, something we never tried. It takes a monarchy to try democracy, you know.
Go figure.
Yes.
How would you like to be remembered?
The way I will be. Not at all.
Thank you so much.
I
really do appreciate it.
So concludes my interview with Mr. Gore Vidal. I'd like to thank today's sponsor, Final Draft, for the finest in script writing software. none better than FinalDraft.com. This is Dusty Wright for the Culture Catch. We hope you tune in again. We'll see you soon. Converge is the word.